Thank you to the Australian Financial Markets Association for hosting our meeting here in this virtual venue. I would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the lands that we meet on today and pay respect to the elders, past, present and future, and extend that respect to any First Nations people joining us today. Today, I want to talk about the new financial data collection, the Economic and Financial Statistics Collection, or EFS for short, and its value to the Reserve Bank during this turbulent time. The EFS is the outcome of a large effort to modernise Australia's financial data. This was a joint effort over a number of years by the Australian Bureau of Statistics, the Australian Prudential Regulation Authority, the Reserve Bank, and, importantly, the financial industry. We have worked in close consultation with financial institutions, including with those that are members of the Australian Financial Markets Association. And I would like to acknowledge here the collaborative spirit that we have encountered from all of you during this extensive project. For just over a year now, the data from the new EFS collection have been available to compile key macroeconomic indicators for Australia. One example is the financial aggregates, which are produced by the Reserve Bank. These statistics allow us to assess the financial and economic activity of households and businesses. The EFS data have enhanced the quality of information available to policymakers and the wider community. For example, they have deepened our understanding of how monetary policy flows through to lending rates and of the provision of finance to small and medium-sized businesses. But the data has really come into its own during the COVID-19 crisis period. Our understanding of how the financial sector is responding to this unprecedented event has been greatly enhanced by the new data. And it has highlighted the value of sound data in troubled times. Before I give you a few examples of this, let's briefly recap the current environment. The domestic economy experienced a severe downturn in the first half of this year as a result of the global pandemic. Activity contracted by 7% in the June quarter, the largest quarterly fall on record. Many Australians have lost their jobs and most businesses are struggling. Globally and here in Australia, governments and central banks have undertaken extraordinary monetary and fiscal policy measures to support their economies through this event. As you will be aware, in March, the Reserve Bank has put in place a comprehensive package of policy measures. Without going into detail, the package is designed to keep funding costs low across the economy and support the provision of credit, especially to SMEs. These policy measures have to date broadly achieved what they were set out to do. We know this because the data from the EFS collection has allowed us to monitor these developments closely and in a timely manner. For example, we can see how the recent policy measures have flowed through to household and business lending rates. We can also see how business and household credit have changed. The EFS collection has allowed us to glean much more detailed insights into these questions, and I will take you through some of these insights now. Let me first turn to the interest rates faced by households and businesses. The new EFS data give us more detailed information on lenders' interest rates. This includes interest rates for new and existing housing loans, as well as loans to SMEs. We also have better coverage of lenders' interest rates. The lenders reporting account for a larger share of the market than was previously the case. And they report interest rate for all loans extended to customers, not just a subset of loans. The data also includes some non-bank lenders in addition to banks. Non-bank lenders tend to lend to a wider range of borrowers. For instance, some of these lenders specialize in providing mortgages to borrowers that require low documentation loans because they're self-employed or that have impaired credit histories. This graph shows variable housing interest rates. You can see the new EFS data, which starts in the middle of 2019, next to data from previously available sources. Variable housing interest rates have declined since March, when the cash rate target was cut by a total of 50 basis points. Indeed, a little over half of the reduction in banks' funding costs since March has been passed through to variable housing lending rates. These rates are as low as they have ever been. Banks lowered their standard variable rates, that's the blue line, by about 30 basis points in March following the reduction in the cash rate. Actual interest rates on outstanding variable rate loans, housing loans, that's the purple line, have declined by a little more than that because lenders have been competing strongly for high quality borrowers. Existing borrowers can get a lower interest rate by negotiating a better deal with their current lender or by switching lenders for a new loan. Many borrowers have been doing this in order to take advantage of the very low level of interest rates. We also now have more comprehensive data on mortgages with a fixed interest rate. Interest rates on new fixed rate loans, that's the green line in the graph, have declined by around 65 basis points since February this year. This is almost double the decline for new variable rate loans, the orange line. The decline in fixed interest rates has occurred alongside declines in swap rates, which are the relevant pricing benchmark for fixed rate loans. Swap rates have declined with a forward guidance for low policy rates for the next few years. The provision of low-cost funding to banks at a fixed rate through the Term Funding Facility is also likely to have contributed to lower swap rates. You can see in this graph that in level terms, the interest rates on fixed rate loans are now about 60 to 70 basis points below new variable interest rates. That's the difference between the green and the orange line. The top panel in this next graph shows this difference between fixed and variable rates. This is the highest it's been in over a decade. Not surprisingly, the share of housing loans originated with fixed interest rates has risen sharply as a result, which you can see in the bottom panel. A large proportion of the increase in new fixed rate housing loans is due to borrowers refinancing their mortgages at these lower rates. Fixed rate housing loans now account for around one quarter of housing credit outstanding. The cash rate reductions have flowed through in full to interest rates on outstanding business loans. Here is a graph of interest rates on business loans split by the size of businesses. It shows that interest rates on business loans have also declined to historically low levels. Interest rates on variable rate loans to large businesses in red have declined by 80 basis points since the end of February. For SMEs, variable rates are lower by 70 to 75 basis points over that period. So, interest rates for businesses have declined by much more than the cash rate reductions. This graph also shows that smaller businesses, the blue line, pay higher interest rates for finance than larger businesses. A key reason for that difference is that banks typically assess that smaller businesses have higher risk profiles as a result of more volatile revenue streams. The EFS interest rate data have greatly enhanced the transparency of the rates paid by borrowers in Australia. You can find published statistics on the lender's interest rates page on the Reserve Bank's website. They're also used in the mortgage calculator on ASIC's MoneySmart website. This data can help consumers and businesses to make more informed choices about their finances. As I mentioned earlier, in recent months, many borrowers have reduced their mortgage rate by negotiating a better deal with their current lender or switching to a different lender. Let's have a look now at how the policy measures are flowing through to business credit. The EFS collection gives us better statistics on the provision of finance to businesses. We now have a more comprehensive measure of credit outstanding by business size. The reported level of banks' business lending is higher as a result. This graph shows these new business lending data by business size. Using the EFS data, we know that large businesses draw on lines of credit in March and April and held these funds as deposits. Some of this was drawn for precautionary purposes, and about three quarters has since been repaid. You can see this clearly in the top line in red, which has this hump shape. In contrast, the volume of lending to SMEs has been little changed since the onset of the pandemic. This could reflect a lack of demand for new loans due to the heightened uncertainty for many small businesses in the current environment. Some businesses may be reluctant to take on new debt as this uncertainty affects their expectation of future revenue and so their ability to repay debt. But banks are also more cautious about lending to businesses, in particular to new businesses and to businesses in those sectors most affected by the pandemic. There are also a number of initiatives helping SMEs to cover their operating costs at this time. These initiatives have probably lessened the need for bank credit. This includes the JobKeeper program and the Boosting Cash Flow for Employers program. Commercial banks and landlords have also offered support to businesses during these challenging times by deferring loan payments and granting rent reductions. Lenders can access additional funding under the RBA's Term Funding Facility if they expand their business credit, particularly to SMEs. For every extra dollar of loans a lender has made to SMEs, they are then given access to an additional $5 of funding from the Reserve Bank. For every extra dollar lent to large businesses, they gain access to one additional dollar of funding. The data from the EFS collection are used by the Reserve Bank to provide a timely and reliable way to calculate these additional allowances. Let me turn to housing credit. With the EFS collection, for the first time, we have been able to track statistics for each stage of the housing finance process. This includes when a borrower applies for a housing loan and when the lender and borrower formally commit to finance. These data have been invaluable during the COVID-19 period. We have been able to observe the impact of the pandemic on lending to households with very little delay. Overall, we find that lenders have still been lending, and this is in the face of disruptions, for instance, due to workplace closures and the handling of a high volume of requests for loan payment deferrals. Housing loan applications have risen in recent months, as you can see in this graph. This might seem surprising. After all, the measures put in place earlier this year to contain the COVID-19 outbreak led to a significant reduction in housing market activity. But the rising level of housing loan applications is consistent with the very large volumes of refinancing activity of late. You can see that in this graph here, which shows housing loan commitments, the stage when a borrower has accepted the offer of the loan by a bank. The left-hand side of the graph shows that many borrowers are refinancing their housing loans, particularly for owner-occupiers. This is to take advantage of the very low level of interest rates, including fixed interest rates. Banks are also offering cashbacks for refinancing a loan held with another lender. So, the policy package put in place in March is working to lower borrowers' interest rates and ease their loan payment burdens as housing loans are refinanced. Lending for new housing loans, that's on the right-hand side of the graph, has also picked up recently. This follows some improvement in housing market activity in recent months, as the mobility restrictions that had been put in place earlier to contain the COVID-19 outbreak had eased across much of the country. More frequent loan payments data from the EFS collection have helped us to track the effects of the pandemic on household spending patterns. This graph shows household loan payments as a share of disposable income. This includes interest payments and payments against the principal, including those into offset and redraw accounts. You can see that loan payments have risen in recent months. Most of this has reflected a rise in offset account balances, and that's a type of deposit account that is linked to mortgages. This is consistent with borrowers saving for precautionary reasons due to the uncertain economic outlook. Borrowers also have had reduced opportunities to spending in response to mobility restrictions. Indeed, we know that the increase in funds held in offset accounts was particularly strong in April and May. At the same time, some borrowers may have been depositing the cash they received from the early release of superannuation or social assistance payments into their offset accounts. In this graph, you can also see what central banks refer to as the cash flow channel of monetary policy at work. That is, borrowers' interest payments as a share of their income, that is the yellow bars, have declined in recent years. This shows that the Reserve Bank's package of policy measures has worked to lower the interest rates paid by borrowers on their loans. Reductions in interest payments in recent months are also consistent with the recent declines in fixed interest rates and the increasing number of borrowers refinancing to lower interest rate products. Finally, I would like to share a few observations on personal finance. Households also have access to credit via personal finance. Personal finance is extended to households for consumption purposes. It includes products like credit cards and personal loans, such as for a holiday, furniture, or white goods. As you can see in this graph, personal credit has contracted sharply over the past 6 months or so, alongside the introduction of the COVID-19 containment measures in March. A large part of this reflected a decline in the amount of credit card debt outstanding, the yellow bars. This is consistent with a decline in personal credit card transactions that occurred in March and April, as retail sales and household consumption declined. That is, people were spending less, and so they were accumulating less credit card debt. Repayments on credit card balances also declined during that period, but by less than the decline in new transactions. So, taken together, these developments have worked to reduce the stock of outstanding credit card debt. But as you can also see in the graph, the decline in the stock of personal credit is not a new phenomenon. Rather, it is an acceleration of a structural decline that has occurred over the past decade or so. Much of the decline has reflected a reduction in the stock of overdraft accounts, also known as revolving credit, and credit card debt outstanding. This has occurred alongside increasing use of cheaper mortgage offset and redraw accounts. These accounts offer a line of credit that can be used for any purpose, and so are a close substitute for products such as credit cards. For instance, a household could redraw from their mortgage, for which they are currently charged an interest rate of around 3 to 4%. Those funds could then be used to repay balances outstanding on a credit card, which attracts on average interest charges of around 16 to 17%. Now, let me conclude. The EFS collection has been a complex multi-year project. Getting better data is not easy, but this project is already paying off. It has provided policymakers and the general public with more detailed, reliable, yet timely statistics. Since March, the EFS collection has given us an early read on the economy and the effectiveness of the Reserve Bank's policy measures during unusually uncertain times. The data show that the bank's policies have helped to lower interest rates for borrowers to historic lows and support the provision of credit. Thank you.
Thank you, Marian. Just a reminder to everyone, you can ask questions during the Q&A session, which is just about to begin. If you would like to ask a question, please ask via the chat function, which is found in the bottom right-hand corner of your screen. Marian, first question for you. I think you might have already touched upon this, but if you wouldn't mind reiterating, that'd be great. Where can we find the published EFS data?
So the EFS data are published in a variety of places, depending on what part you're looking for. The Reserve Bank publishes on their website in the statistical tables quite a large variety relating to the financial aggregates, which, as I said, we produce. And you can just go to the statistics area on our website and you will find there those tables. There's also tables on interest rates, and we actually provide quite detailed cuts of that data. Those are new tables we've been setting up at the beginning of the year as we got that data. All the data on the Reserve Bank's website are aggregate data, but you can also find APRA, which publishes monthly ADR statistics, so bank statistics, and that's data by individual lenders. So you could go to their website if that's the part you're interested in. ABS produces the lending indicators based on the EFS data, but it's also an input into their national accounts.
Great, thank you. The next one relates to one of the charts that you had up there, which showed that the fixed interest rates were much lower than the variable interest rates. And the question simply asks, why are fixed interest rates so low?
So this has been certainly a very interesting development because, as you can see from the little data we have, really the view on fixed interest rate data has increased much with the EFS collection, but that gap has widened. So fixed interest rates are typically priced off what's known as the swap rate, which has a forward-looking component of where the markets think the interest rate will be. And so the fact that we have put in place forward guidance that interest rates will remain low for quite a period has actually lowered those swap rates. There are also effects that have to do with the term funding facility that we think play a role there, where we are providing fixed rate loans, and so that has also reduced the swap rate. So it's really keying off that element. A third element that should not be neglected is anyone who's got out there and looked at what banks offer. It is quite clear that banks are competing at the moment, particularly on the fixed interest rate loan. If anyone who's been looking for new loans, that is kind of the margin where banks are competing heavily, and that's probably contributed also to those loans becoming lower.
Great, thank you. The next question is about the data being submitted. And it says, given a huge focus of EFS was around improving data quality and the associated controls and assurance, what are your thoughts regarding the quality of the data being submitted through EFS?
Like always, these things are evolutions. I think it's been a big change for us. We have not revamped the financial data collection for 2 decades. So this is the first change in 2 decades. We are actually generally happy with the quality of the data. We would not publish on our website data that we would think are unreliable. But it is also early day yet to see whether we get further improvements. The people closely involved will see that we've clarified some additional things on certain data items where we think some more guidance is needed. But we still think it is a big step forward. And what we got so far is looking very consistent and at times better than what we had before.
Great, thank you. The next one relates to the buy now, pay later sector. And the question asks, on the contribution to personal credit growth chart, what is the other category composition? Does this category include the buy now, pay later sector?
So it does include the credit component of buy now, pay later. So there's certain cutoffs when they have to report, but yes, they are included. They account for about 2% of personal credit. So it is a sector that's been a lot in the news. It's growing quickly, but it's actually off a small base. So the answer is short is yes, they are included, and they're about 2% of personal credit.
Thank you. The next question also relates to the buy now, pay later sector. And it just quite simply asks, should the buy now, pay later sector be regulated like the banks?
Look, this is not my area of expertise, so I won't take it. I think there's other parts here. Some aspects of regulation that the Reserve Bank is looking at in the context of the review of the retail payment regulation, I can point you towards that. There's documents on our website for that, but it's not really an area I'm an expert in. So.
Great, thank you. Obviously, low interest rates have been with us for some time now and probably will be for some time in the future. This question relates to banks' profitability and said, what are the effects of low interest rates on banks' margins and or profits?
I think we will have to see where the profits will go, the margins will go. I want to speak only about the data that I see, but what we can see in the data that we have is that banks have passed through the cash rate reduction to the lending rates. Different sectors, so business and housing loans, as I talked through, have adjusted by a different margin, but overall lending rates have reduced roughly in line with the cash rate reduction. And of course, we also know that funding costs basically have reduced in a similar ballpark. So it's passing through, but where exactly that falls, we will have to see as we see the bank's profit reports and margin data coming out over the next year.
Great, thank you. The next one relates to repo transactions or repurchase agreements. It says, will the RBA be publishing additional data on the repo market given the expansion of items collected?
I think we're still getting familiar with the data and getting our head around, but I think you will certainly see analysis that we're doing with that data in the future. We will have to assess which parts are useful to publish for the broader audience that we try and target with our statistic collections. So the answer is it's a relatively new data, so we're still looking through how to best look at it and present it.
Great, thank you. The next one relates to non-banks, or non-major banks at least anyway, and it says that we've been hearing that the non-major banks are turning away deposits. Why do you think that is?
I want to stick to what I can see in the data rather than in anecdotes. And what I can say is that the latest published data for July suggests that the deposits continue to grow for the system as a whole. And that is true for major banks and non-major banks alike. And that is what the data say. And I don't have evidence on individual anecdotes either or not.
All right, fair enough. The next question says, can you please elaborate on the decline in personal credit?
So that's been a very interesting phenomenon. And as I said during the talk, there is a longer term structural issue going on here, as well as the latest story in COVID, which was one of people not using their credit cards because they actually didn't go out and go shopping during that March-April period. And the longer-term story is actually one where we've seen generally that people used credit card debt less. And one of the reasons for that is that we've had over, you know, probably a decade or more, an increasing prevalence of other accounts, such as mortgage offset accounts, that provide exactly the same facility as those loans, but it's secured against the mortgage, so the interest rates are low on that. And we found that people use those offset accounts and debit cards in a way they used to use credit cards. And that is certainly one story that is in there. There's a few other stories in there as well that have to do really with how banks have responded to responsible lending obligations in some segments of the market, and that might have led to a shift of where the loans are being booked.
Great, thank you. The next question in relation to fixed rate loans, we have seen a shift to more fixed rate loans. These are still relatively short term for the most part, 2 to 3 years. Does the data suggest these terms might increase over time?
It's early days yet, I think, for us to establish a trend. So I haven't seen any firm evidence for that. I think we just need to wait and see whether that's a market that's developing or not.
Cool. Thank you. Given the amount of government deferral, also the amount of deferrals that banks have allowed for loan repayments over the last 6 months or so, someone is asking, can you elaborate more about loan payments data? Has it been distorted by the bank's deferrals of interest, et cetera?
So there would be an element that in the loan payments data, so some of the loan payments is what you pay in terms of principal. And if you pay less principal, your loan payment is lower. So you would have some element of that, but there's a lot of other driving factors. And what we found, the biggest driving factor of the most recent episode was really the increase in offset accounts. Many people use these actually also just as the main checking account. So it is hard to distinguish that from people putting more money against their loan to people just having income that is sitting there because they couldn't spend it. But in any case, a loan payment deferral would go in the other direction because you'd be paying less on your principal at that time.
Thank you. This next one is a little bit cheeky, but I will pose it to you anyway, and I'll understand if you don't want to answer it. But it says here, just on data, I was wondering what you made of the employment data just released. Is this a turning point for the labour market, or do you still expect employment to head higher later in the year?
I'll give that one a pass.
Okay. I saved that one until last because I thought it was a little bit controversial. Thank you very much, Marion. Are there any final thoughts in regard to EFS? Any messages for the participants today?
Look, I've been with the EFS for the last 3 years. It's been a very interesting collaboration with the industry, and I just wanted to reiterate that we have really appreciated the collaborative spirit that we have found in working together on this great new data collection.
Well, tremendous. Thank you very much for your time today, and thank you to all of our participants for attending the meeting, and we wish you all the best.